Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. This is Tom Takar, and I am, of course, joined by the Prince of Snarkness, Tommy McNamara.
Against all odds, we're here again.
So this is a little bit of a kooky episode because we had Patton Oswalt. There's no dilly dallying about it. You saw it on the title of the episode.
Yeah. So quickly, yeah. Just quick backstory. So basically, I had contacted Patton and asked if he would. He's here in New York promoting Michelle McNamara's book, which is incredible, which everyone should buy. It's called I'll Be Gone in the Dark. But I had messaged him asking if he had would have any time to do the podcast, and he said he could squeeze it in, which was amazing. We were so excited.
Yeah.
But I described what the podcast was in my message, and he had never said what band he would do.
Sure.
So we kind of had no idea.
Yeah, this is the first time we've gone into the podcast completely blind. We didn't prepare at all before
we
did
thought,
it.
Yeah, we kind of thought maybe we'd just talk about music in general. Or
right.
We were looking up oh, he was in a Weezer video. We could talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
And then right before we start recording, we find out we have about half an hour to record, and Pan just goes, I'm going to do Phil Collins. Then we hit record and just started doing it.
We had to record immediately,
yeah.
Which obviously we were grateful to do. What a gem of a man.
Oh, yeah, he's the best. But just know that...
You're a Pam of a man.
I don't know. I don't know anything about Phil Collins. Don't be mad about that.
Yeah, don't be mad at us about this.
I was born in 1990. He had been dead for years by then.
We did, in retrospect, we reached out on Facebook and we did a little bit of homework. But Patton honestly gave... a great argument without needing. We didn't have to do a lot of the normal bullshit we have to do for some of these low name guests. Every guest we had before this is a nobody. And we're resentful that they even came on. From now on, it's Patton Oswalt level or bust. So this is the last episode of Stand By Your Band. but no, we went to Facebook after the fact, and we got some fun comments about Phil Collins. Our dear friend, the Dick Princess herself, Melinda Cashner, that's her nickname from the old podcast. She says, the shape of his head is gross and wrong. And if you look at, we
fair
referenced the album cover in the episode, Patton talks about the one that looks like Phil Collins is in hell.
No Jacket Required, which was actually an homage to Blink-182's Take Off Your Pants and Jacket.
Of course. And people didn't realize that what they were doing, but or what he was doing, but Phil Collins does have a time machine. This is the one thing he used it for. Yeah, I kind of went into it. The first thing I thought of when he said Phil, because it was truly like a pop quiz. Like, you said Phil Collins, and you just start racking your brain about everything.
Yeah.
We're like, Genesis. And he goes, and we're not going to talk about Genesis. And you're like, oh, shit.
We're both wearing Genesis shirts. Like, oh, no.
I just immediately went, Tarzan. You'll hear it in the show. I don't know why I'm giving you everything we talked about. But here's some commentary here. I like what Joe McAdams said here. He's a frequent commenter and dear friend and hilarious comedian. Says, dude looks like a nerd, but he's probably pretty chill. Our friend Liz Maupin, one of the creators or co-producers of Late Late Breakfast, says, I was in a very crowded restaurant last week when In the Air Tonight came on. I mimed the greatest drum solo / fill of all time. I cannot not mime that enthusiastically every time I hear it. I'm talking, I threw my hair around and shit, too.
Damn.
I think that says a lot, you know, because that song is so fun.
We've all done that.
Everybody's done
whether it. You're in your car or whether you're drunk or maybe you're both.
Or maybe that's one of the ways to listen to music we've never talked about. Drunk. But you're such a booze hound. I just attribute that to all of them. You fucking booze bag. All right. Let's hear a little bit of In the Air Tonight just as a refresher. So throughout the episode, Patton referenced some songs. We didn't have time to play them while we were sitting with them. So we're just going to we're going to play little samples while we're sitting here in this very moment. So this is the song In the Air Tonight. Which I think that's the quintessential.
The Phil Collins commercial.
Of course.
Yep.
The commercial for selling Phil Collins.
Yep.
Sorry if that made an annoying noise just now. This is In the Air Tonight. I'm going to skip forward a little bit. So we can't hear this right now, but I know that it's playing in my heart. Boy, I hope it is. So I don't know exactly what part is playing. Hopefully it's the drum part that's fun.
Certainly not.
It could be. We've gotten lucky before.
That's true.
All right. Well, that was in the air tonight. I have no idea which part you listened to, which is kind of fun. You want to guess, Tommy?
I think it was
The answer is no. Okay. No, you don't. Let's read another comment here. This is my friend Jeff LaFave from Bloomington, Indiana, formerly a member of Who's On First, my improv troupe in college.
This is going to be our most listened to episode, and you just named your improv troupe.
I don't know why I did that. I'm really sorry. I don't even care about that improv troupe.
All right.
So he says, I've been an avid Phil Collins fan, I guess he's trying to say, since I was a sad 16-year-old. I've heard In the Air Tonight so many times that I've grown repulsed of it. The air drum drop isn't that great. Also, he got his ass kicked by Kokomo's own WWF champion, the Ultimate Warrior, with Gilbert Gottfried as a manager in his Two Hearts music video. So that's our thoughts
what?
From Facebook. Some wrestling trivia for those of you who care. Speaking of caring, let's hear a little bit of I Don't Care Anymore.
Nice.
Which is another song that Patton talks about on the episode. Again, we have no idea which is played, so hopefully it sounded good and pleasant. Let's jump to Against All Odds. I'm gonna skip forward again here. Now that one I like.
It is great. That I mentioned this in the episode, but there is a guy who did that on The Voice, and it was incredible.
That is like, it's funny. I think our generation has that, and like we get to be like, oh yeah, I saw Kelly Clarkson kill that song.
Yeah.
What's that song that Clay Aiken did really well? The Bridge
Over Troubled Water.
That's how I'll always remember that song.
Yeah, he wrote it though.
What a song.
If I was invisible.
Now that's... You'd love to be invisible, you sick fuck. You hollow man ass. All right, the last song that we're going to play that Patton references in the episode is a little ditty called One More Night. So here is a little piece of that. All right, that's One More Night.
One more night, more Ooh. Night.
What a song, and what an episode. Tommy, I'm so psyched that this is great.
Yes, this is amazing, and if you're very annoyed that we haven't started listening to Patton yet, here you go.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Stand By Your Band, the podcast where comedians defend shitty music.
We're here recording where we always record, in the New York Public Library. We do every episode back here.
Of course, every time we sneak in right as they're closing.
Yep, that's always the
plan. They seem aggravated, but we're here, and we're happy to be here. We have a huge guest this week. Let's introduce him. Patton Oswalt.
Hi, listeners. How you doing? I hope you enjoy what I have to say while you're checking your emails and playing Flash games online. Enjoy.
Patton, thanks so much for coming on. This is amazing.
Thank you so much. Yeah, thanks. I was glad to come, man.
Of course. You're also going to be on our Me and Nikki's radio show tomorrow, which is the same time this comes out. So,
wow.
Competitor.
Double tap Patton.
Patton, do you have any, so on this podcast, like I said before, we talk about shitty music, or music that...
Easy.
Music that people shit upon.
Shit upon music. Very good.
Right.
Yes, and do I just introduce who I'm going to be defending?
Yeah, yeah. Who would you like to discuss today?
I would like to discuss, and I'm going to make this hard on myself, I'm going to discuss Phil Collins. And my defense will not include any of his work in Genesis. I'm just going to focus on...
Tarzan.
On his solo stuff, yeah.
On the work in Tarzan.
Yep. On the work in Tarzan, which he beat Amy Mann for an Oscar.
Is that right?
Yeah, she was up. I always tease her whenever I would introduce her on stage. I would go, please welcome Oscar runner-up, loser to Phil Collins' monkey cartoon love song, oh Amy Mann. Yeah, because she was up for Magnolia.
Wow.
So, yeah, yeah. Yeah, Phil Collins, who... here's the thing about Phil Collins that I'm going to defend. Yes, he does very, very seemingly calculated pop fizz. But what I contend that he's been doing is he has been smuggling a very, very dark and complicated autobiography of, you know, his many divorces, some very ugly ones.
Yeah.
In some pop songs. Now later, I mean, early on, he didn't even disguise the darkness. Or hey, if you listen to In the Air Tonight, which I know there's a huge urban myth that he watched a guy. No, that was, if you re-listen to that song in the context of a guy who has gone through, who a relationship has ended in the most ugly way. And he's saying, like, if you were drowning, ooh, I would just let you die.
Wow.
I've seen your face before, but I don't know. Like, you think you know me, but I am now, I've come back and I'm different. You have no idea who you're dealing with right now. Think of it as a guy preparing to go through divorce proceedings with someone, and he is psychotic with anger.
Mm-hmm.
And then songs like, I Don't Care Anymore, which I Don't Care Anymore. I can't believe that hasn't been used in like a dark, vengeful action film. I mean, that is a grim, creepy, very stark, stripped down song.
You hear that, John Wick 3?
Exactly. Get that'd in be there. Amazing. And then there's another song of his called I Can't Believe It's True, which is, it's almost like he did it as the opposite of I Don't Care Anymore. I Don't Care Anymore sounds like it's angry. The lyrics for I Can't Believe It's True are just as angry, but it sounds like this kind of pop fizz fun, and it takes you a while. It's almost like when you listen to Outkast's Hey Ya, which was this really fun dance tune, but the song is about a very ugly divorce.
Oh, yeah.
That they hid as a fun, like, Motown dance song, yeah, which I love when people do that.
Was that an Andre or Big Boy?
That's Andre.
Andre went through a very, very bad divorce.
People say that about our podcast, too. It seems like we're joking around, but if you listen closely...
We both are going through turmoil.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, he also would do songs... again, No Jacket Required was the first album I ever bought.
Oh, wow.
First jacket I ever bought. The thing that... The kind of couple of clues on there is, like, it's Phil Collins, No Jacket Required. This, I get it because it's casual. But the picture on the front, he's lit in red. It's just his face...
Oh,
lit
yeah.
in red, and there's beads of sweat. It's almost like he's burning in hell.
Yeah, it's a terrifying album cover.
Yeah, it's a terrifying album cover.
Devil, for
right,
sure.
And then the some of the songs. I mean, you know, Sussudio is just, you know, what
I love
what
Sussudio.
Fits into this? But yeah, what, not wrong with Sussudio. But then like Take Me Home and Turn It Off, or you know, are about just urban alienation and basically, you know, Take Me Home is about a guy dying in an insane asylum, basically.
Oh, wow.
You know, it's really, really... So I do like someone, just like I loved 50s directors like Douglas Sirk, who could smuggle stuff about, you know, homosexuality and racism into these seemingly kind of bubbly, fizzy entertainments. Phil Collins was doing that with pop music in the 80s, you know. Even something like Against the Odds, or Against All Odds, which he did for that movie.
Yeah.
That is a searing opening of a soul and a heart, disguised as this, you know. Someone was pointing out, like, during the height of punk, groups like Steely Dan, that they're all like, well, they're just singing songs for, like, yuppies to hook up to in fern bars. Yeah. But if you listen to the lyrics are just vicious, way more vicious, especially about love, than a lot of punk songs. Had a very sour worldview. So I just love when people disguise something as something else and then people miss it. I love that.
I just also want to say there's nothing wrong with yuppies hooking up. That's how most of us came about.
Yeah. Well, there was who was this guy like that one of the kings of light rock, that guy Dan Fogelberg. It was like, listen to Sex Pistols, not Dan Fogelberg. But then there's a song he wrote called So Hard to Say or Hard to Tell. But again, it's this very poppy, fun, upbeat song with the darkest lyrics about relationships and human beings that he hides as this fun, we'll play this on the docks while our boat's moored and we're having a couple of sangrias, but the lyrics are not about life is beautiful. It's about you're probably going to get your heart stomped on, you know. So
how do you feel about Jimmy Buffett? Because his lyrics are a little bit, if you really delve in, I feel like a lot of those are a little depressing.
Well, you know what was weird was he wrote Margaritaville for Elvis. He shopped that around. It was written specifically for Elvis. Mm-hmm. And his people heard it and said, well, this sound, because it's a song about just depression and alcoholism.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're just like, I don't know about this. and a lot of his songs later, once he realized, I can be the fun loving pirate. But that song in particular, there is a lot of like personal you know, and also he was really good friends with Hunter S. Thompson, so he, you know, he had some weird.
That's wild. I didn't know that.
They co-wrote a song together.
That's insane. What do you know?
It's something about the legend of, and I cannot remember the name.
Fear and Loathing in Margaritaville, I think it's called.
The legend of Cheeseburger in Paradise.
Suddenly bats were flying out of the blender, man. And I saw, like, you know, my hammock turned into a vagina with teeth. Like, whoa, what the hell, dude?
That's the name of a burger, actually, on the menu.
I mean, how much your guys are a generation removed from me. Mm-hmm. I don't think Phil Collins got a lot of radio play when you were coming up. He was everywhere when I was growing up. He was like a one-man Beatles. He very famously, what is it, he played Live Aid in London, got on the Concorde. One way or the other, he basically did that crazy zip back through time. He played both Live Aids.
That's insane.
In the day.
I feel like I always got him like secondhand in pop culture, where it was like seeing Mike Tyson drum along in The Hangover.
Yeah. Right.
Or seeing, you know, in American Psycho, the monologue where Sussudio's playing in the background and he's talking about Phil Collins. I always got him kind of like that way. And then I would hear someone sing Against All Odds on The Voice. And I would be like, but I just like, because I never really listened to Phil Collins, so I would hear it in these weird ways. And then.
Yeah, it was weird. He was a showbiz kid. You know, he's an extra in Hard Day's Night. He's in the audience watching the Beatles when he's a teenager. Did a lot of like British kid shows and then kind of fell into that 70s psychedelica. And he became he was the drummer to get. You know, again, at Live Aid, when Zeppelin played, he was the drummer. They're like, yeah, get Phil out here. Crazy. He can do, you know, his drum stuff is very, very complex. And he drummed to the point where he damaged his hands. He gave himself nerve damage. And I think only recently, he literally can't hold drumsticks.
Wow.
And I think like recently he was able to rehabilitate himself so he could drum again. I don't even know if he can drum again. Mm-hmm. But because he was just non-stop. He was on every album. He was on the woman from ABBA when she did her solo album. He played the drums on that. He, you know, she was just this, like, he was the, all that the drum effect. In the air tonight, I think he actually did first for Peter Gabriel on one of Peter Gabriel's solo albums. And it has a name. I don't know enough about drumming. There's a specific effect, and I think he kind of either had a hand in inventing it or discovered it or somehow. So, you know, he's just this guy that, maybe music snobs that are not actually in the industry are like, Phil Collins. But people in the industry are like, Phil Collins, that guy. Yeah. You know, he's amazing. He just drums on everything.
I just watched a movie, Sing Street. Did you see that movie, John Carney movie? The guy who made Once.
Yeah, I heard about it. I didn't see it, no.
So there is a line in that movie where a character says, "No woman could ever love a man who listens to Phil Collins," was the actual line.
That's
from
up
the
there
movie.
With the Coldplay line. Yeah. From In 40-Year-Old Virgin, there's a line that, you know how I know you're gay?
Yeah.
You listen to Coldplay, and that's the foundation of this podcast.
I love really?
Coldplay. I like Coldplay.
Stone, yeah.
And then,
that should be in the opening song or whatever, the little montage
yeah.
of clips.
That's a... Well, I think
make a sound collage.
About damn time somebody came up with some ideas on this show.
We wanted you to be a guest and also like rescue.
You should make a sound collage because that line that you just said, you know, uh-huh. "No, I know you're gay," was in a Coldplay, and then the one about Phil Collins. I bet there's a dozen lines in movies of some character
sure.
making a
flippant,
you know, thing.
Yeah.
Nickelback's got to be in there.
Jeff Bridges, "I hate the fucking Eagles."
The Eagles,
yeah.
You know, so like you can make a whole.
Or the almost famous Philip Seymour Hoffman, "The Doors Were Drunken Buffoons." You can
oh,
throw
and
that in
we
there.
Could put "Lock the Gates." That's never been used. Yeah, in
well,
podcast,
except that
right?
Mark uses that for his show.
Of course.
No, what does he say about that? He goes, "The Doors were drunken buffoons who thought they were poets, and the guests who at least understood, well, we're just drunken buffoons," mm-hmm. which makes them more fun to listen to.
Yeah.
I would argue that same thing about Phil Collins. He is a pop music artist who happens to put a lot of his dark personal stuff in his songs, but that's not at the forefront, and that makes him, in my book, way less pretentious and insufferable than a lot of these guys that are all about my feelings.
Yeah,
like, that's
yeah.
got to be the main thing. So there's something really beautiful about that for me.
It's like a Blue Velvet thing with the, mm-hmm. you know, panning down under the... Yeah,
yes. you know. yeah. Down into the loam with the where the ants and things are killing themselves. And yeah, while Laura Dern sunbathes. yeah, so, and apparently, and there's an interview with Phil a few years ago in Rolling Stone that is one of the darkest. He basically says, like, "I'm probably going to kill myself."
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and he became obsessed with the Alamo, and he became the biggest collector of artifacts from the Alamo. He just is obsessed with it, and he has this whole thing in his basement or something like that. I mean, he's just a fascinating, dark guy that was a workaholic that... He was a workaholic, but he wasn't an android.
Yeah.
He had to disguise, I think, a lot of very, very deep feelings through what seemed like very fun kind of pop culture stuff.
That is so bizarre. I mean, we've all had our Alamo phase.
We have a whole room in our apartment that's dedicated to Alamo artifacts.
Well,
it's
the
Tommy's
Alamo,
room.
I mean, I think maybe for him it's because the Alamo is almost like the little Hibernia shootout. It's one of those times in history where huge figures all were in the same place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's Santa Ana going up against Jim Bowie and Davy Crockett, and they're all like, "Wait a minute,
just
what?"
Mythical, yeah.
Yeah, same with the Little Hibernia Shootout, which is Melvin Purvis going up against John Dillinger and Babyface Nelson, and like they're all, it's like this is like a Marvel movie right now.
Yeah.
This is the closest we got to that.
For sure.
So, you know, he was always one of those, he was around huge figures his whole life.
So is he from L.A.? Is he a California guy?
No, Phil Collins
Oh, he's from England.
Very, very British.
British, yeah.
He could not be more
Well, the
British.
Beatles are from L.A.
That's
I know
right.
that.
Yeah, they,
across
yeah,
the pond.
The Beatles are total Val guys. Yeah. They're from the Valley. So, yeah.
The Beatles was Brian Wilson.
Yeah,
that's right.
Brian Wilson.
Yeah. Mr. Eagle Man.
Yep, Mr.
Yeah,
Mr. T.
Brian Epstein made them do those accents because it was just so hot at the time. Okay, this is a really cool story. I remember I was talking to Colin Hay from Men at Work, another band
Colin
that
Hay.
I would love to do. But he said, everyone talks about Beatlemania. Oh, you know, back in the 60s, it was Beatlemania. He goes, it was not Beatlemania. It was the British invasion. And what happened was there was that one summer when it all started where for one summer, every band was equal. Dave Clark Five, Beatles, Freddie and the Dreamers, all the same.
Mm-hmm.
It took a couple of summers for the bands to go, "Oh, it's you guys are going to keep running and we just have the one." Okay, got it. Like, "Oh, you're going to keep going." I thought this was a sprint. You're going to actually have this. You're going to change the world we live in. Okay, fine. Like, but for a while, it wasn't Beatlemania. It was the British sound.
Yeah.
You know, and to the point where I think Andy Kindler pointed out a lot of bands went during the British New Wave and post-punk, suddenly a lot of... His impression of all the bands he played in the early 80s was, "Yo!" They would all do like this fake British accent because that was how he got people interested in what you're doing.
And a third thing.
Yeah. You. But that's how they would say the word you. So, but yeah, like, you know, Phil Collins has that great song called Like China, which he sings in this very almost working class, amped up Liverpudlian accent about kind of a lower class guy trying to date a beautiful girl whose family, and it's so painful and heart wrenching. I'll hold you like China. Yeah. You won't feel nothing. I'll hold you like China. Oh. It just like he sounds like a low level British thug singing this song. So, you know, it's amazing.
That's awesome. Have you ever been made fun of for defending Phil Collins?
No, because I kind of diffuse it, because I, even when I say, in fact, the way that I met my first wife, Michelle McNamara, is directly because of Phil Collins. I did a show. Did a show called Bring the Rock. And I talked about, you go up and you talk about a song that means something to you, whether it's American or not. I talked about Phil Collins' One More Night, wow. Which was, you know, and it, my first, like, real high school girlfriend was this Irish girl, and I was like, Irish girls are my kryptonite. I talked all about that, and about how, you know, Phil Collins is singing this song, like, just give me one more night. I know there's a better guy, but I'm telling you, I'm the one. I'm just, please. And then as I'm waiting after the show, Michelle walked by and went, hey, Irish girl's nice, and, like, patted my arm and walked out. And then I was like, duh. And then, and then my friend, Greg Barron, said, go out, go say hi to her, you dummy. And then so I went and, sorry, God, I'm so dry today, talked to her. So that was kind of how, you know, thanks, Phil. Yeah. But I mean, I'm just very upfront about it. I love him so much that I don't care what people, there's no proving me wrong, because I'm like, I like his music, so what are you going to, you know, sure. are you going to somehow convince me mathematically that I'm not enjoying, that I'm not feeling this? It'd be like me going, you're not actually enjoying those Cheetos. No, I actually am. Why don't we move on? You're not going to win this one. Like, that was always been my attitude.
That's what Tommy was saying about Woody Allen the other day.
About what?
Woody Allen.
Only the later stuff. That's all I like.
It's, you know, Woody Allen is a, he will always be a conundrum for me. I don't know about generations after me, but there are certain movies of his, specifically Manhattan and Stardust Memories and stuff, that do have some real moments of grace and truth, despite the fact that they're coming out of this creep. But there were moments that made me look at life differently.
Yeah.
Why did it come out of that guy? But there you go.
I wrote like 3 papers about Annie Hall in college. It was like, I watched it a million times. I was so obsessed with it. And then it's like,
I still love that movie. It's hard to, you know, you can't take back what you already liked. You can't be like, actually, I never liked it. Yeah.
I did want to bring up, it reminded me of, not Woody Allen, away from Woody Allen. Was you had that bit about how you don't, like, you get to a certain age where you won't enjoy things, like, ironically anymore. Right. And I think that ties into, like, our podcast just in general a lot. Yeah.
Everyone reaches an age. Mm-hmm. I put it as, I don't hate any music anymore. There's music I don't listen to.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I don't spend time treating it as an affront to me.
Yeah.
So, I just don't listen to it. Because you get to an age where you're like, and also, especially, maybe it's because I'm in show business and I've met enough people that were heroes of mine that were douchebags,
yeah.
And then people that I used to kind of make fun of or think were hacky, and they're the nicest, like,
yeah.
And you almost want to go, would you please be a douchebag, and then this other guy be the asshole, because this is upsetting a lot of my worldview right now. And also, even beyond that, forget me, I'm so sorry, guys, hang on. Please edit this out. I don't want people.
It's like when Robert Durst started coughing at that table.
Of course, it was me.
Yeah, fill him up. You also, as you get older, especially in showbiz, you meet a lot of people that you realize, oh, everyone just kind of knows each other and works together. It's all the same. You know, there's a great documentary called Dream Deceivers about when Judas Priest was on trial for allegedly making that kid kill himself through their music.
I didn't know about that. Wow.
It's an amazing documentary. And there's a line that always struck me at the end when Rob Halford's leaving court and they've been, you know, like, no, you didn't. There's no backward masking on this. This is crazy. And he goes, well, you know, I still feel very bad for this family, and that's not the intention of what we're doing, and we're looking forward to going back on the road and bringing our form of entertainment to our fans. You realize, yeah, it's just entertainment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, the harshest punk band and Dolly Parton do the same sound checks, do the same, okay, let's do, get the song list till we do, you know.
Yeah.
As my friend Blaine Kapatch says, that punker Gigi Allen, I don't know if I remember, so he's
throwing
this
shit.
Guy, the way he would shit on his hand, in his hand, and throw it at the audience and perform naked. But he would do this, and he goes, this is Gigi Allen before a show. When I shit in my hand, I've got five. I'll be coming off five. Like at the base, there are all these. So yeah. Like if Dolly Parton and Rob Halford sat down in a room together, they would have so much in common to talk about. Like, oh, you've done that. Then you, yeah, I don't like the way it echoes. Exactly. Like when I, you know, it's all the same on some level. They're just musicians, and it's weird how you see the connections with what they listen to and what they like, and you know, all that stuff. I mean, anyone who's a songwriter, doesn't matter what medium they're in, like, if they're in it long enough, they'll go, yeah, Dolly Parton's one of the greatest songwriters on the planet. I don't play country music, but my God.
Yeah.
You know, and the reason you don't think she is because you don't know anything about music.
Yeah,
you know, sure. Same with me. Like, everyone says, your favorite comedian is supposed to be people like, you know, Dave Attell and, you know, Dave, which I love Dave Attell. I love David Cross. I also love Brian Regan and George Wallace because they're brilliant joke writers, and Elaine Boozler, and because I've been in it long enough to actually see the craft through the so-called, you know, cliques and divisions. It doesn't matter anymore that I'm, so that always means something to me when you see the much, much bigger connections. Yeah. There are drummers that are listening and go, well, look, I know that Phil Collins isn't your cup of tea. That's some fucking amazing drumming he's doing.
Yeah.
That's, or what I remember when I told, I was talking to Steve Martin one time, and he was telling me about Earl Scruggs, where Earl Scruggs got to the point where he could play 16 notes a second on his banjo. And I told Scott Ian from Anthrax, I was like, 16 notes a second, dude. He goes, what? That's insane. And then he started listening to some Earl Scruggs because it's beyond genre. You get into technique and what you're both doing. Yeah. So,
all of our guests have talked to Steve Martin. That is one thing I found.
Especially Nick LaValle.
He's very available to.
Thank you so much for coming with.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah, thank you so much, Ben.
Yeah,
for talking about Phil Collins from sunny LA.
All right, we'll be back. All right, that was fucking Patton Oswalt. How about that?
We are one step closer to my goal of getting everyone who was in Blade Trinity to do the show at one point or another.
Damn it, I wish I could remember anyone else's name besides
Wesley Snipes.
Who's the other guy? The
I don't know.
Who gives a shit? But it is our one goal. And if we hit $2,000 on Patreon, we're going to make it there. That's the price for the entire cast. Hey, patreon.com/standbyband. Let's go ahead and promote what Patton's got coming up. He's got this, the book just came out.
So he's been on tour to promote Michelle McNamara's book, I'll Be Gone in the Dark. Right now it's at number 5 on Amazon overall, which is crazy. It's so good. It's like a mix of memoir and true crime. It's honestly, I've read a bunch of true crime books, and it's my favorite in the genre. It's so great. So please check it out if you have any interest in that at all. And
so insane. He also has an NBC show.
AP Bio.
Bio. I think it's already aired.
And check out Annihilation, his last Netflix special.
Yas Queen.
And I'm sure he needed us to plug him.
Yeah, but you know what? He said he'd only do the show under these conditions.
But
most importantly, how about you check out Tommy McNamara headlining Caroline's March 14th?
Yes, and also this week, if you're in Boston, March 2nd, I'll be headlining the Rockwell. So come to that, too.
Check that out. Check out me and Nikki Glazer's SiriusXM show, which will also feature Patton Oswalt in the morning, the very morning that it is releasing. So check that out. That's SiriusXM Comedy Central 95. And we'll be at the Mohegan Sun in Connecticut this very weekend.
And also our next Stand By Your Band Live, which will have Nikki Glazer on it.
Also have Nikki Glazer, Tim Dillon, Rob Hayes.
And more.
And more. More, please.
We just lost everyone.
Yep. Yeah. All right. Thanks for listening, guys. Hey, keep on rocking.
Oh, no.
Bye. Stand by your band.